Right now it is time for the Frickin' Frack of Nick and Nack. Tim Luke and Greg Strom, the appraisal guys. You can find them on the web, tqag.com. And we bring them in on a Tuesday morning, and we say good morning once again to Greg and Tim. Good morning.
Well, good morning. And it's just me today. Greg is a little under the weather, unfortunately. So he's sleeping in.
All right. Well, that means we can talk about digital. No, we won't.
Absolutely. Right. Right. Well, we just might. Who knows?
Who knows? No, I'm going to start off with a strange story. Workers at Braven Metals process about 10,000 vehicles every year, okay? Mm-hmm. Some of the stuff they just crush away. Some of it they send off and have it auctioned off. Anyways, they found a car, a 2002 Ford Explorer, at an auction that they sent to in Linwood. All right. The sport utility vehicle was supposed to have been inspected by a third party prior to its arrival, but somehow it slipped through the cracks and it just went right out to the auction. Well, there was a body in the back of it.
Oh, this sounds like a Law and Order episode.
The discovery was made just before the car was to be sold for scrap or auctioned off, or if it wasn't auctioned off, then it would have been crushed, okay?
Right.
Police are still trying to identify the remains and determine how the person died, but it doesn't appear to be a homicide. That's wild.
Well, oh, that is really wild. And could you imagine? I just can't. You know, this is why you inspect all your items before you purchase anything.
Imagine going out to out to a car auction and you want to buy a used car at a reasonable price for your son or your daughter or your grandson or your granddaughter. And what are the chances of finding a body in the back of it?
Right. Check under the hood or in the trunk.
In the trunk someplace. But check, for gosh sakes.
Wow.
Yeah.
No, that's crazy. And, like I said, it sounds like a Law and Order episode.
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, and there was three options. The car was picked up by this junk dealer, and he was going to sell it, and they were going to, you know, put it into the regular auction. If it didn't sell then they would have scrapped it for metal, the price of metal. It's just, it's funny. That,
yeah, well, they probably would have crushed it and sold it and probably never even have found it.
Have found it, that's exactly right. Amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Wow.
Well, anyways, people donate cars. People donate cars to us all the time. And what happens is the car is donated, and if it sells at auction, we get a decent price for it. If it sells, if it doesn't sell at auction, then they sell it. They pay us by the pound.
As right, the scrap
for scrap.
Yes, and when they do that, there's a form, an IRS form called it's 8283. That's the donation form,
yeah.
And they've updated that form so that you can, when you are donating cars, you have to include the VIN number just so that the IRS can also look at the blue book value.
All right, so yeah. enough about bodies and cars. But speaking
bodies
of
bodies and what's going on? Talk about junk in the trunk.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. That's great. That should have been the headline. All right. This is an interesting story, and it's from People magazine, and they've got a letter. There's a letter out there that was to Paul McCartney. From John Lennon, and it's a letter where Lennon was really upset to Paul McCartney, and a letter has now surfaced that is up for auction for $33,000, which, if you're a Beatle fan, I think, if that stays there, is probably a realistic price for people that can't get in on the big-time auctions, because I would think a letter like that would increase in value over time.
Yeah, absolutely. You've got two of the, you know, to and from. And when it comes to letters, it's really about what does the letter contain? What does it talk about? There have been a number of just various types of letters that are thank you letters, especially from celebrities, from from one to another, or thank you for writing, thank you for coming to that concert, thank you for this or that. But when you have something that is substantial and really goes into depth about the relationship between the two people who are writing, who's writing and sending, that's where the value, the desirability goes up as well. So interesting. And it was drafted in 1971 is what it says, which is interesting. And so currently it's at 33,000 with 11 days left before it concludes. So it must be, you know, one of those extended auctions. And we'll see where that goes. But, you know, a letter like that with the handwriting, I mean, it easily could go to, $50,000.
Well, especially,
that could be a very reasonable number.
Especially what it was about, it was that John being really upset at an interview that was given by Paul McCartney, basically tore Yoko and John apart because Yoko Ono was responsible for the dissolution of the Beatles' business partnership. And that's one of the major events of the ending of the Beatles that happened there. And so the letter has even more provenance than just a normal letter being upset about somebody did, because it's about something that people in the time knew about, was talked about.
Right. Exactly. And so when you have something like that, you know, that really drives the price, because that was such a big deal too, about the breakup of the Beatles and the rifts, and you know, that they separated and really didn't come back together, and all having all of that really that ties into the desirability, you know, of the letter, and it's in Paul's or in John's words, you know, to Paul. So very interesting. This will be interested to know, like, where this letter came from, also how they got a hold of it.
Well, People Magazine, they obviously paid somebody for it first.
And then
somebody, of course, bought it from People Magazine. But anyway, next story is for real estate owners. And of course, I think we're through the real estate boom. But a 10-acre mountainside mansion in Alamo, California, has been on sale for $20 million, hasn't sold. It was lowered to 17.5, hasn't sold. Well, it's now up for auction with a price of $14.5 million. I think auctioning off real estate, and especially real estate like this, is far more difficult than auctioning off a piece of art. I just think that it's difference is night and day.
It's every asset class is a little bit different, and they have different parameters in which you have to really check the boxes off to see, hey, what is the level of desirability? Who are my collectors? It also could be, and this is where real estate and art really come together, is, and I've seen this before because I've talked to a lot of my real estate auctioneer friends, and it's the same thing in the art market, is if the seller has an inflated idea and is not looking is not listening to the comparables that are in the marketplace, so the comparable sales. This is what drives what we do, whether it's doing appraisals or also thinking of selling in a marketplace, is you need to look around and see what the comparables are. And if you're not getting good advice, or if you're just saying, no, I won't sell this for less than 20 million, this is what it is, and the comparables are telling you it's more in the $8 to $10 million, you know, you're almost double and you're too far off, then it becomes very difficult. And I think a lot of times that's what happens, is that in art, in real estate, in whatever it is that people feel, well, since I've owned this, this must have gone up in value exponentially over the course of time. So I'm entitled to this. I've taken care of this. And don't you know how rare this is? Well, no, let's take the blinders off. It's not that rare. It's not, here's what other things are selling for, and here's the reality. And if that's what you want, then you might need to hold on to it for another 10, 15 years, and let's see for the next real estate boom. But at this point, this is where things are. And what I have found in at least the collectibles area is in talking to people and saying, let the market dictate where the things should sell and where the market really is that sometimes when it's inflated, and I've had this happen many, many times, is that, okay, we'll put this up. It is rare. It might bring $10,000. But I know that this is a little overvalued. Fine. So it goes up, does not sell. We then lower the opening bid to $5,000, and then it ends up selling for $15,000, a little more than what they wanted. So it's sometimes you need that that competition within the marketplace, and that's why this is the core of why when we put values on things, especially whether it's for an appraisal, we look at what the final outcome is, but for auction, it's those estimates, those auction estimates are tools to bring people in and to say, hey, this is what we're hoping, and you might have an opportunity to bid here. And the more people that you have, the bigger pool of bidders that you have, the bigger potential you have to either reach or exceed whatever the expectations are.
It's interesting because if you watch car auctions, they go in with a set price, what they want to sell the car for. But sometimes they don't get that price. And what the auctioneer does, and it's not just one company, all of them, they go to the owner of the car or the vehicle and say, let's take the price off, and let's take our chance and let's getting a bidding war started by removing the price. And all of a sudden, once that price is off, there's a lot of times where all of a sudden the bidding heats up because it's a less expensive bid, but in the end, in the heat of bidding on a car that you want, a lot of the times they get what they were asking, if not more.
Yeah, and that's the whole thing with auction, and that's what I try to explain to people, and that's what they don't get. Is, of course, we would all love a sure thing, right? Go in and say, this is my price, and this is what I'm expecting, and this is what I need it to sell for. Great, we understand that, but that isn't always going to happen. And sometimes, and that's a great example, Marshall, is that when you're doing that, it shows that, wait, there are people interested, maybe, but, oh, let's go down. Let's just take it down just a little bit. Let's take this off. And let's see where it goes. And that's the whole crux of why auctions are so important.
Yeah, and if you don't get the price you want or get close, then you just wait till the next auction. Like you said, you just wait.
That's it.
Till the next auction comes up.
Right.
But I bring that up because this is a pretty big week in for cars. Actually, it starts August 12th, and that's the Monterey Car Week, where it's coming back after an absence. And they're a little worried because the market's cool off a little because it hasn't been active. But really, there's some incredible cars, and this is one of the top shows.
Yes, and there are several big highlights that are coming up. Sotheby's has an incredible Ferrari, I think, that's estimated at 20 to 30 million. And there's a couple other companies that have cars that have put out their ads and said, hey, this is what's coming up and this is what we're doing. I mean, it's interesting. This whole market and this whole asset class is an interesting area, especially when you get into this higher end. And this is what you're describing is typical of the major art sales that take place in May and November. So if you're, when this is their timing, this is when they typically have some of the better and or the best cars that they are going to be offering. So there could be some trepidation, but it's always been in my 32 years good, or 30, almost 33, in my good items, great, desirable, fine examples of items in great condition that come up always find a buyer. They always do. It's the what they try to set those great prices and those higher prices. And you have to think about it as from a marketing standpoint too. It's those higher prices, and if you're a collector, oh, I can never afford that. I can't. Well, maybe let me try to just jump in at this level, and I'll start here. And you have to start somewhere as a collector. But these big prices really help generate more movement within the marketplace. And that's one of the things that a lot of people don't understand about auction, is that big price, whether it's that Andy Warhol that broke a record earlier this year, or if a car goes up and it breaks a record, the news coverage of that and people who are into that, they hear that, they see that, but the dealers also, there's a trickle-down effect, is that good things then start to go up and say, well, you know, if that sold for that, well, then this lesser one, we should probably raise it 10% or put this up. So there's always movement within the marketplace, and that's why we always tell people, get the best that you can afford and go from there.
And the next auction, I don't know how many people, younger people, I don't know how many people under 50 would really know about this auction or care about this auction, but the John Wayne auction. And John Wayne had more than 700, there was more than 700 costumes, awards, and memorabilia from the state that was put up, okay? Now, the whole auction brought in $5.38 million for this memorabilia. And one of the things, when he was in the Green Beret movie, the Green Beret that he wore brought in almost $180,000.
Yeah. That was at Heritage, and that was a couple years ago, and they also had his, I think, a Golden Globe that he had won for True Grit, and that had brought in $143,400. Celebrity items. There are several big auctions actually that are coming up in the next couple of months, which I'm sure we'll talk about as it gets closer. I think in September, there's all of the Betty White items are coming up, as well as, I think, October, there's an auction of Kenny Rogers memorabilia as well. But John Wayne was always a major, he was one of those major movie stars and had just such a catalog of movies, and was such a big personality in the whole profession as well. So I think that I don't know if I would agree that you have to be over 50 to know who John Wayne is, because with streaming and services and movies and on demand, and they are marketing, I don't think that they market I don't think they market the estate of John Wayne markets like the estate of Marilyn Monroe or the estate of John Lennon. You know, that is out there, and there's always something that's going on or being marketed, or a new movie about their lives or background. John Wayne, not so much, but still the movies that he was in and the personas that he played, that also really, I think, plays into people's desire to want to add things to their collection, especially if they are big collectors of vintage Hollywood.
Well, just think about the eye patch, and True Grit had an eye patch.
Right.
That sold for $47,000, and his cowboy hat that he wore in Big Jake went for $119,000.
Yeah. And the interesting thing was, too, is that a portion of the auction proceeds, I guess, were used for the John Wayne Cancer Foundation to help fund cancer research. So, a really, really all around in putting something together like that, a lot. I mean, $5.7 million for all of your personal possessions, like that, that's pretty great. And also, it's interesting that he that he held on to all those things, because now a lot of the celebrities, I mean, they don't get to take those items. A lot of the celebrities on certain movies or films, movies, TV, is they may be able to take one or two items, but the production company, they've really clamped down because of what things have been selling for, and they're the ones that have invested in that, and they pay. So it's the studios. I think Julian's just had an auction, and it was with one of the studios, whether it was Warner Brothers or it was from a lot of the shows that they've put out there, and all the costumes and props and things from those shows. So it's, I think more and more studios are also realizing, well, we can't let those stars go home with a lot of that stuff because we need to sell it.
Yeah, it's but it's funny because you're right. I mean, times have changed. Now when movies are made, studios and stuff, they're a lot more possessive because they see what happens. Especially if a movie trilogy or series, or if an sure. actor makes a lot of good movies in a row, now they hold on to that stuff. But this stuff from John Wayne is, you know, you're back in the times where all these things were props from the movies that they just kept.
Right.
They just kept, you know. Now the studios probably make you sign an agreement.
Yeah.
Not to take the stuff.
Yep. Absolutely. Absolutely. And I will tell you, even just, and that's now, back in the 1990s, when I was at Christie's, there were a number of things that would just walk off a set once they closed, because at that point, they were done. They had all their shots done. They had everything. And it just was easier because then it had to be reassembled or repurposed for something else. And we would have a number of things that would come off of like these modern movies that were only a couple years old. And we'd have like Disney and other companies coming to us saying, no, this is ours. And it's been stolen off our set. And I'd say, great, show me the police report. Because if not, then it's not stolen. And we would have to sell it. Of course, they didn't have anything. They didn't know what to do. So we would end up selling it. It would sell for great things. I mean, I just remember, and I was the auctioneer for this. It was Disney came to us, and they had stuff from The Rock and stuff from there were a couple other Disney movies that were out. And they said, oh, my gosh, we know this person. He goes from set to set when we close. And I said, great, show me the police report that it's stolen, because he's got paperwork that he gave $20 to your set guy. And it's his. He's got a receipt. So, you know, we've changed a lot in the way that this has happened.
Everybody's on the lookout now. So are you at a lull in the time, or are you back to traveling soon?
Yeah, actually, I am doing this. This is interesting. So my team is in Grosse Pointe, Michigan. They're doing a big estate appraisal. I was going to go, but I am doing my recertification for the International Society of Appraisers. So every 5 years, you have to go through this requalification course. It's a 3-day course. And, you know, it's basically a refresher, going over all the new rules and regs that have come into the profession. But it's all part of the professional process of just going through and continuing education in the appraisal methodologies and what's going on. So I start my class today. It's online. It's today, tomorrow, and Wednesday. So I will be here, but then I'll be in Atlanta next week. I'll be traveling and doing some slowly getting back into it. You know, we're right in the middle of summer, or as it's winding down into September, and this is where I'm sure we'll be gearing up for September.
So now this course you're taking, does this advise you of new laws that come up and stuff like that?
New laws, new regulations, changes to the Uniform Standards of Professional Appraisal Practice, or USPAP, which we talk about. It also goes into changes in scholarship or methodology or different lawsuits that have come up that really say, hey, you know, you better watch this. It also goes into best practices in doing divorce appraisals or insurance appraisals, or, you know, we touch on a little bit of everything. And it's geared toward experienced appraisers. So people who have, you know, because it's every 5 years, you have to do this. So it's people who have been doing this and have been out there. So it'll be a very nice exchange of ideas and in a forum of people across the country. I don't know how many people will be in the class, but it'll be great. Yeah, to be able to just talk about, here are some of the challenges that we've also encountered, and how do you deal with this, or how do you deal with that?
And give you some of the answers to questions that might come up in the next 5 years.
Exactly, mm-hmm. Exactly. Especially as to like where things are and where things are going, and you know, are NFTs really going to maintain their value? that's the billion-dollar question. Got that in for Greg.
It might be $1,000 question too, one or the other.
Or right. A dollar question, right?
All right. Well, give our best to Greg. Hope he feels better. And
I will.
And we'll check in. Yeah, we'll check in with you guys next week.
That sounds great. Take care. Have a good week, buddy.
You too. Take care, Tim.
Bye-bye.
Tim Wook. Greg is under the weather today of Treasure Quest Appraisal Group with Appraise This here on Robinhood Radio.